What is going on? It is the Sports Ethos Clippers podcast coming at you for the first time in over 2 months. Yes, we need a break. I just realized that I never recorded a podcast after the Clippers lost to Minnesota in that winner go home. And so it was obviously very depressing. Was it Minnesota's New Orleans, wasn't it, Shane? It was, yeah, it was New Orleans. Yeah. Shane Young, by the way, is our guest today. courtesy comes from us from Forbes as he joins us today to talk Clippers basketball. So, yeah, it's been a while. That's how long it's been. I forgot the Clippers lost to both Minnesota and New Orleans and forgot the order it happened, but it was Minnesota first and then New Orleans in a game the Clippers were supposed to win, and then Paul George got COVID. So that was just not great. But that's the last time we talked to you, so it has certainly been a long time, and there's some stuff to chat about. Obviously, Robert Covington is back with the Clippers. Today, Nicholas Batum opted out of his $3.3 million contract the final year. There's now news about Kyrie Irving, which, frankly, I think is more just stuff for the media to talk about than actual news. John Wall possibly may be bought out. So, and then we, of course, have the NBA draft, which Shane and I honestly know very little about. And so we're not going to touch on that very much, but we are going to talk about what positions the Clippers might target. Since, let's be real, the people that are listening right now, you people, you have no idea who the players are. For the most part, they're going to go 35 to 55. I mean, you may think you may know who the Clippers are going to get, but to get it correct is very difficult. And so you may actually know who the players are, but to know who the Clippers are going to select is a whole different monster. So we'll talk about that a little bit later on. But before we get to any of this, folks, there's no such thing as a fantasy offseason, only the pre-draft season. And here at Sports Ethos, the pre-draft season has already begun. Our expert analysts are churning out important lessons learned and draft analysis on incoming rookies so you can get a jump on your prep. And we'll have an incredible free agency and summer league coverage as well, but only if you're part of our premium member team. Head to sportsethos.com now and click on the premium tab to grab a fantasy pass today. Seriously, cook yourself one extra lunch per month because it's only $5.99. You heard me, $5.99. See you there. All right, Shane, let's jump into some hoops, man. First of all, you are coming off a fantastic fantastic postseason where you got a chance to cover the NBA Finals. You went to both arenas in Boston and in the Bay Area. I want to hear about that experience, man. What was that like, getting a chance to watch the Warriors? And if you follow Shane on Twitter, by the way, and it was quite the journey during the postseason, because it's one of my favorite things is that Shane was the biggest, you could call him Suns fan, but he's not obviously a Suns fan. He's a writer. He just likes watching good basketball. And so he obviously was telling everybody and everybody that would listen, the Suns are going to win. The Suns are going to win.
Yeah.
Chris Paul, best player, means best point guard. But let's be real. Shane also had no idea that there was something going on behind the scenes with COVID and that there's random things happening that we will never find out with that squad. So he wouldn't have known. And then, of course, he was telling us that Steph Curry is one of the top 10 players ever. And Shane's correct. I mean, that solidified with that win. So tell me about that experience, Shane. What was that like?
Man, the only word that comes to mind is surreal, because last year was my first time really covering the finals. You know, I guess you could say up close, but I was only in Milwaukee, and it was, you know, with COVID being still in full force and full swing, you know, we weren't really allowed in the postgame presser. So you had to do through the whole Zoom experience. And that was just weird, being the first finals that was all virtual. So you would be in the arena, you would see the Bucks fans go just absolutely crazy, but then you wouldn't be able to get the raw emotions from Giannis, Middleton, Drew Holiday, and all those guys. This year, they opened it up, and they, you know, we had the top tier access. We were able to go anywhere we wanted. It was just, it felt like home, despite me never being on that stage before. And Brandon, I'll always think back to my childhood. I was 14, 15 years old, I believe, whenever Kobe won his fifth championship, and watching that entire series, like from games 1 through 7, Lakers Celtics, that was the moment I said, like, that's going to be me. I'm going to be a reporter in those press conferences. I'm going to ask the questions, you know, at the end of a pivotal game 7 like that. So for it to happen, you know, 12 years later, finally come to fruition, and it's another dynastic team like these Warriors. It was awesome, and I think, not to over flatter the Warriors or their fan base or whatever, but like it's awesome being around them from a media perspective, because you're never going to be short with coverage. You're never going to have it's always going to be a surplus of things to write about or things to talk about, things to ask about. There was always someone to talk to, whether it was at practice or after the game. It seems like the players are always open. They're the nicest group of players that I've really encountered, to be honest with you. And you know, you see what the experience is like of a team that's been through six of these beasts, you know, six NBA finals. For the Celtics, it was just their first with this core. So no doubt in my mind, Boston will be back. But just individually, from my perspective, covering the finals, being around all these media figures that you watch on TV, you know, you talk to Zach Lowe on the sidelines at practice. It just feels like it's a lot to soak in the moment. But ever since I got home, you know, last Friday, I've been able to kind of reflect on the journey. I still have another piece coming out on Steph tomorrow, so I'm excited.
Who's the coolest person you talked to? Was it Zach Lowe?
It's probably Zach Lowe, but also, he's the most famous by far, I would say. But I really enjoyed talking to Tim Bontemps, you know, in the cafe before game six. I asked Tim, I was like, are we going back to the Bay? He's like, yeah, I think we are. And we kind of agreed that it was going to go to a game seven. I scheduled my flight for game seven right then and there. Huh. And I tell you what, Brandon, it felt good to be able to cancel that sucker. It felt good to be able to cancel that sucker after that.
Yeah, I mean, it was quite the performance. And for you to be there and to watch Steph do his thing. And it's funny, Shane, because as a Clippers fan, I'm used to the Warriors just destroying the Clippers year after year when they had KD. It was just embarrassing. Yeah. I mean, J.J. Redick has talked about it on his podcast at length about how there was just a certain thing that whenever the Warriors came to town, they just had the Clippers number. And and Draymond talked about it, how they felt the same way, that they really owned the Clippers whenever they faced them. And I root against the Warriors all the time, but this team just feels different. It feels different because KD's gone. It feels different because of what Klay has gone through. And rooting for his comeback story, and Steph, and hoping that he can maybe win a title without any quote unquote big help, and all that happened. And, you know, Klay got his comeback story, Steph got his title, no KD. It just felt like this team was more likable. Of course, there's Draymond, who is just Draymond, but it just felt like this team was more likable. Gary Payton Jr. was there, and keeping the second part of me, and then you had just guys who worked their ass off, and the Andrew Wiggins story was incredible. It was just a good, a fun team to root for.
I think, you hit on something about Draymond. Although he's probably one of the, five most unlikable players just from a objective standpoint. Yeah. Like, I love the guy, but, I mean, I 90% of NBA fans don't.
Yeah.
Even though that's the case, I think a team in a city like Boston, although they were chanting FU Draymond constantly, I mean, I think I've heard that probably for 40 total minutes in the whole series, which was just wild. Although they were just ragging on the guy, I think it come from a place of, I wouldn't say love, but but respect and appreciation. Like there's no vitriol. It's not like, the stuff that you saw from, Cleveland fans when LeBron went back there, or something like that, where there's like a personal hate. I think this was just like a competitive spirit against Draymond, and I think that's what most of the fan bases feel against him. I think Clippers fans also would share that sentiment against Draymond and other players. And just as the Warriors as a whole, I was telling someone earlier today, I think this is the first title Golden State has won out of their four that it felt like they won this championship with intelligence and experience. I feel like the other championships were either a little bit, I would say the talent disparity, the talent discrepancy, and just overpowering other teams with KD. And then obviously in 2015, you catch a few lucky breaks, you beat a wounded Cavaliers team, but it still counts all the same. I think this title was like the purest. It was like, they beat them with their IQ. It wasn't an overwhelming talent gap until Steph Curry made it that.
Yeah, and it'll certainly be a team that the Clippers have to face next year, because they obviously have some decisions to make on a couple of players and Otto Porter, Kevon Looney, Gary Payton, but they still have their core coming back. And so it'll be a team the Clippers have to face. And right now, if you look at the odds, you look at different places, the Clippers have the second or third best odds to win the NBA title. So let's talk.
It should be first.
Yeah, hey, and let's talk about those Los Angeles Clippers, because you have been vocal on Twitter. And I joked, of course, about the Sun stuff and then the Steph stuff. And you've been vocal that the Clippers are going to be the champ next year. And before we get to any of the individual player stuff, I want to talk about that, because as someone that's been a fan for a long time, to be one of the prohibitive favorites feels like a very odd spot to be in.
Yeah.
And I don't love it. I also do love it. I mean, I think it's...
Did you love it in 2019?
I like when the Clippers are supposed to be good, obviously, and it makes the games more enjoyable and more fun to watch. And the only thing is that when the expectations are that high, every game, if you lose, it's depressing. I mean, because you think you're supposed to win every game. But here's where I kind of want to push back a little bit, because I'm curious to get your take on it. We still haven't seen this team stay healthy, Shane.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, obviously, on paper, this is a team that should win the Western Conference next year. But PG has had trouble with injuries. Kawhi Leonard has not been able to stay healthy. Norm Powell got hurt this past year. This is a team that has struggled to stay healthy. So how is it possible to choose the Clippers? I feel like they haven't earned that right to be picked as the team to win the title when they haven't stayed healthy. What are your thoughts?
It's a fantastic point, and that's the number one response that everyone will reply to on Twitter. Like, why are you banking on health when you've never been able to get that as a result? Like, why are you banking on that happening? I think for me, it just comes down to it has to happen at some point. It's bound to be this time. Like, I'm just going to go out on a limb and say year four, and that's another thing someone was telling me earlier or the other night when I was playing basketball. Like, one of my buddies was like, you know, what year of the Kawhi PG partnership is coming up? And I had to think to myself, like, Jesus Christ, this is going to be year four. And, you know, in terms of under contract, although Kawhi didn't play a single minute last season, mm-hmm. this is going to be year four of it. And I think it's just time, Brandon. It's just time that they figure out a way. And really, it's not even figuring out. It's getting freaking lucky. It's time they get some luck and have everyone on the court when it matters the most. And I hate to break it to a lot of fans. Like, that is going to mean that Kawhi and PG do not play 72, 82 games. Like, it's just not going to happen. I think I won't say coast through the regular season, but I think they have built up enough depth, which we'll talk about whether they should sacrifice that in a minute. But I think they've built up enough depth where they don't have to overextend. I felt like, to me, although in 2019-20, you know, the first year of the Kawhi and PG partnership, a lot of the talk was about their great depth, you know, with Lou and Montrez leading that bench unit. I felt like the depth was a little bit overrated, just a tad bit, maybe 10 to 15% overrated. I didn't think they had the depth that you could rely on when Kawhi or PG missed. I think now they have proven they can still win basketball games. And you could even point to the Western Conference being weaker this past year, which is true. So it won't necessarily mean they can win the same games that they did with Reggie, Luke Kennard, and all these guys leading the charge, which I don't think that'll be the same again. But I'm also not banking on PG missing, 60 or 50 games this year, 60 games, whatever he missed, with various injuries. And I think Kawhi is just going to be taking it very easy during the season. I don't expect them to get the top seed. I think that's what gets lost in all that. It's not that I'm on there saying that they're going to go 63-19 and cruise and get the one seed and blast everyone in the playoffs. I think it's just going to be a slow and steady pace, and more so like that first year under Ty Lue, which was two seasons ago now, where they got the four seed and made the Western Conference Finals that way. When they had PG healthy during the entire playoff run, and Kawhi obviously got his ACL tear towards the end of that second round. So I expect a top four home court seed for the Clippers, and they're going to ride their depth during the games that Kawhi has to sit out. Now, I'm out of 82 games, Brandon, I would expect Kawhi to play 55. I just think it's going to be like resting here and there, not even on back-to-backs. I think it'd just be on back-to-backs plus other long road stretches. So I guess the long-winded way of saying that is their depth is going to help them, and that's why we'll get into it. I don't want them to gut that depth.
Interesting. To give the precise number, PG played 31 games last year, and the year before that was 54. Obviously, that was the COVID-shortened season, and then 48 the year before that. So injuries have certainly played a role in the Clippers' success because Paul George hasn't been able to stay healthy. Of course, Kawhi Leonard has not been able to stay healthy either. And it's interesting the way you come about that in terms of this is finally their year to get lucky. I don't know how much luck has followed this franchise over the years, so I hope you're right.
I forgot to add one thing about that. You actually brought up a good point about why now. And I think something else I was going to kind of mention there is, you remember LeBron's first year in LA, how he had that groin injury and missed the final 20 or 30 games, and then he had a long offseason. Yeah. Like for the first time in his career, he was off from April to October or September, however you want to frame it.
Yeah.
He came back and was just a man on a mission, had one of his best seasons, and they won the championship. And he was healthy the entire year, LeBron, in 2020. I kind of just feel like that's Kawhi and PG coming up. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Like, find some wood and knock on it, if you will. But the long offseason for the first time since 2019 for these guys, I think it's going to help them.
It's a good point, because if you look at the Lakers title a couple of years ago, I'm not sure they win it if LeBron didn't have that rest before the bubble. And the fact that he got that rest was huge. He was able to play big minutes. He was obviously well-rested and ready to go and carry that team to an NBA title. So that is certainly the hope in terms of the miles on the legs of Kawhi and PG. They're not quite there compared to the miles that have been on other guys that are in the postseason year after year and have stayed healthy. You just got to hope that no fluke injuries happen. I mean, because there certainly have been fluke injuries that have happened. I mean, you look at Joe Ingles doesn't bump into Kawhi Leonard, who knows what happens a couple of years ago in the postseason. You know, it's very possible the Clippers go on to beat the Suns and then go to the finals and beat the Bucks. I mean, it's entirely possible that would have happened. So we'll see how it goes. But I hope that you are correct and that luck plays is on their side. But I just don't feel like they have earned the right to be called the favorite. I think the favorite right now would be Golden State or Milwaukee or Boston, a team that has proven it and shown that they've been there. Everyone, you listen to national talk radio, and even a guy like Dan Patrick, who I respect a ton, and he's like, we know the Clippers, they're there, but you know, what if they won? It's like, he's right. He's right. I mean, it's a very reminiscent of Lob City Clippers. You know what I'm talking about, Shane? Where everybody was anointing the Clippers in Lob City before they even won anything. And this team, the thing is, they have won something now. They've gone to the Western Conference Finals for the first time in history. So they've shown that it's possible. And they did that without Kawhi Leonard. So you just need them to stay healthy. And then I think people will be like, oh, okay, so now that they're healthy, they actually have a legit chance to win.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it comes, a lot of the confidence and the brashness that comes across on Twitter whenever we say something like that about the Clippers being favorites. I mean, it comes down to how great they looked this past season when neither star was on the floor. Like, I use great loosely. It wasn't a great team. They were,
they were a 500 team.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, context included.
Yes.
They should not have been what they were. They should not have had those comebacks that you and I talked about on podcast coming down back from down 35 in Washington. You know, like, stuff like that just should not have happened. And I think it resonated with a lot of teams and front offices in the league. I think coaches now and other teams now, I think they, I'm not going to say fear, but like they're not taking the Clippers lightly now. It's like, you know, and that's without Kawhi and Paul on the floor, what they were able to do. It's a huge credit to Ty Lue. It's a huge credit to their front office for putting together probably like the best constructed team that I can remember without having the overpowering of like a Steph, KD, Clay and Draymond core. Like, you know, you don't have that big four, those four Hall of Famers, but you have a team that is just extremely well equipped in every position. And, you know, they are, I guess my number one fear, Brandon, is that a lot of like the main contributors have a lot of miles on them, and they have a lot of responsibility. It's not like, you know, Nick Batum, you know, who's getting up there in age and miles. It's, you know, assuming Nick comes back, which I think
let's just talk about that now. You brought him up. Yeah. So let's talk about it now. He had a player option, $3.3 million, opted out. Nick Batum is 33 years old. He came out after the season saying that Ty Lue basically saved his life and that he'll stay with the Clippers as long as they'll have him. So it really seems like a foregone conclusion that he's opting out for financial reasons. And frankly, I don't blame him. I mean, he was integral to what the Clippers did last year. And it feels like it's certainly going to be an $8 to $10 million contract coming his way. I wouldn't be surprised to see something like 3 years and $29 million, 3 years, $30 million. What are your thoughts in terms of what a contract would look like for Batum? Because he is 33 years old, and he's a guy that wasn't making very much last year. He certainly was with the Clippers on a prove-it type deal, and he did prove it.
Yeah, and to be clear, you're talking about $8 to $10 million annually, right?
Yes.
I think,
so 3 years,
right
30.
Around, yeah, right around mid-level exception. I think that's what he's worth, and I think that's what he should be getting. And really, the defensive efforts are worth more than that. I mean, the defensive efforts alone are worth 15, but, you know, a team that has this many high salaries, I don't think that they would want to do that. But I think with Batum, that's kind of what I was saying. It's like it's not that he's just a contributor where you can say, oh, anything we get from Batum is gravy. No, like he's their best defender. He's their best communicator on that end of the floor. He is their Draymond Green, if you will. It's kind of remarkable. And I do fear that, you know, he's had two really good seasons or really great injury-free seasons for the most part, you know, dealt with a few nagging things here and there. But I hope that the luck doesn't run out on that end, because in the same breath that we're talking about the luck swinging their way with Kawhi and Paul, it could swing the other way with Batum and Reggie. Mm-hmm. And Reggie's had a lot of like playoff series under his belt. He's had a lot of regular season miles. And for someone that he's their best north to south creator in some instances, which is not great, which we'll talk about too, considering they could trade for another north to south guy. I think Reggie and Nick Batum's health is extremely important. So I love Nick Batum getting $8 to $10 million to come back to the team, if that's the case. Let's kind of hope that that is. But that's the biggest concern, if you will, about like, can they stay healthy? It's the role players for me.
Yeah, Batum 33, Reggie Jackson 32 years old. So I think we agree that it really is a foregone conclusion that Batum will come back to the Clippers. It would be certainly stunning to see how much he and his wife embrace Clippers Nation and talked about how much they love Clipper Nation, and that they will be here as long as Ty Lue will have them, and then to leave for more money. It just doesn't make sense. It feels like something along the lines of 3 years, $30 million would do the trick.
Yeah, and I think he's earned it. He's definitely not been hurting because he's been getting paid by Charlotte. So yeah. I think for him, it's just gravy for to come to a team, get a relationship with Ty Lue like he has, and be here long term.
All right, let's talk about it. You have teased it multiple times. You have been basically the
too many times
the co-podcast host here and teasing what's coming up here. Kyrie Irving. It was brought out in the media yesterday. It was a very slow news day and just something that came out through Shams. It wasn't through Woj. And it really feels like a, hey, my client's not getting the respect he needs. I'm going to feed you this so you can get people talking to see what will happen. And maybe Kyrie will get the respect he deserves. To me, it feels like Kyrie is not going anywhere. It just would seem very odd to put together a trio of Kyrie, Harden, KD, then lose Harden, get Ben Simmons, and then to lose Kyrie also. It just doesn't seem like it makes sense, and I think it would piss off Kevin Durant. So let's start there before we go into any speculation of who the Clippers could trade for him. Do you think he actually moves, or do you think this is just something that was floated out to get people talking?
I'm kind of torn. You know, on one hand, I'm with you. It would make absolutely zero sense for Brooklyn to do anything.
Yes.
Without trying to fix the situation, without trying to get everyone that needs to be in a room and talk things out. I don't really understand why this is happening. I guess it's contract negotiations and you know, the front office rightfully saying, like, why do we want to commit to you long term when you can't be on the floor long term, you know? And you haven't shown a desire to love the game enough, I guess you could say, to play during the regular seasons and get us in solid position. But then again, I don't think something this, I'm not going to say severe, I don't think something like this blatant would come out if it wasn't a serious topic or if it wasn't a serious conversation. I don't think, you know, you don't get the wording that we got, which I can't remember exactly what Shams said, but I don't think you get that type of wording if it's not something that could realistically happen. So I'm kind of 50-50 on it, Brandon. If you force me to choose, I think he stays in Brooklyn until maybe the deadline and he plays there. But all it's going to take, as we've seen many times with that team, that organization, since KD and Kyrie got there, all it's going to take is like 1 or 2 weeks of just sour news to come out of that team to break it. And I feel like they don't have enough to sustain something like that. So I think he'll be there, but until something else goes sideways, then I think he'll go elsewhere.
Yeah, it's certainly a confusing situation because he's got all the talent in the world, but he is just a nightmare to have off the court and all the baggage that he brings. And I understand what you're saying in terms of the wording, but it just feels like it's something that could have easily been fed, floated out there to try and get a little more respect on his side, to get the Nets to try and pay him. But it just doesn't feel like the Nets would get proper players in return. I mean, because
is wild for a 20 or for a 30 year old that has probably 10 more years left in them. Like, if you wanted to, you know, it's wild that they wouldn't get that much in return.
If you don't have the name there and you look at a guy that averaged 27.5 points per game last year, 4.5 rebounds and close to 6 assists per game, along with a combined 2 steals and blocks, and he shot 47% from the field, and he shot 42% from 3 and 91.5% from the free throw line, you would say, oh yeah, that's certainly going to require a lot to get something, to get a lot of return to get a player like that. But then you look, and this brings to the second part of our conversation, what would it take on the Clippers end? Because there have been teams that have been floated out, and those teams have been, of course, the Lakers and the Knicks and the Clippers as a possible destination as well. And this certainly seems, Shane, and this can kind of bunch into our conversation about will the Clippers make a move in general, that the Clippers have contracts that are very friendly in terms of being traded. There are good numbers, around $16 million, a Kennard deal that was, I believe, 5 years, 80 when he signed it. And then, am I correct on that? I think it's 5 years, 80. And then you look and you see a guy like Marcus Morris that signed it. It was 4 years, 64 for Kennard. You look at Marcus Morris and the contract that he signed with the Los Angeles Clippers, which is 4 years, $64 million. And these contracts, a couple of players together, would add up to a guy like Kyrie Irving. Here's where I am. I think that if you have the opportunity to trade away Marcus Morris and Luke Kennard for Kyrie Irving, you do it 100 times out of 100. And the reason why is really simple, actually. I understand what he brings off the court, and I understand it's a nightmare. There's two main reasons. Number one, Kawhi and PG have struggled to stay healthy. So it gives you a third guy that has also battled some injuries throughout his career, but it gives you a third star just in case one of those guys is hurt. And like you said, a guy like Kawhi is going to need to take games off. So it gives you three guys where you only need to play basically two at a time, and you could rest the other and space them out and get them to the postseason. Number two, and this is really the most obvious for me, is that you and I have talked about Luke Kennard and what he brings to the team during the regular season. But then you go to the postseason, all of a sudden you shrink that rotation down to 7 or 8 guys total that are going to be on the basketball court. And there are a couple of times where Luke Kennard did not find himself on the court. And if you're going to have a guy that you're paying $64 million over 4 years and you're not going to play him in the playoffs, to me that contract doesn't make sense. And it makes sense to get a guy that would be immediately as part of your top five. That's my number one reason, Shane.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, what you said, you know, after all the soliloquy I said about not gutting the depth and you know, whatever the case is in terms of what we had to get rid of, I think if your package of Marcus and Luke is all you do, then yeah, you do it. You know, I'm more so coming from the standpoint of do not get rid of Norman Powell, or I don't want to get rid of Ivica Zubac, your best screener, your best rim protecting threat. Like, I think it, once you get into those pieces, that's where I'm jumping off. But I think, you know, what you mentioned with Luke Kennard, he's not going to play, he's not going to be trusted in a lot of scenarios if you have a loaded team and loaded depth. And that's absolutely true. I think Kyrie with Norman Powell, like, on the court is just as good as, you know, having Luke Kennard out there. I think Kennard and Powell would be redundant. So get rid of one, which would be Kennard, obviously, because Powell's better all around. Might not be that lethal of a shooter, but he can defend. So I think, you know, if it's Marcus, who is getting up there in age, looked slow sometimes, and isn't getting faster, like, it's not magically going to get better, then yeah, you get rid of Marcus and Luke. But that's it. I think that's like the package that I would do. I really wouldn't overstep that. Once you start, you know, I feel like Zubac has been in 28 different trades in the last 2 years, just hypothetical trades. I think once you start getting rid of, like, you know, your best screen setting bigs that are able to get Kawhi, PG, or in theory Kyrie Irving into the paint at will, that's when your team is not as good as it once as it was. And, you know, I'm curious about your take on this. If you do, I like your point about putting the third star in there just in case. We have seen Kyrie thrive as, like, the third. I hate the word third option or second option. I hate that because that's not how basketball works in terms of options. It's like what is open on a given play. But as, like, the third usage star, they can attack off the weak side. We saw that with Harden and KD in that first year when they should have won the championship if everyone was healthy.
Yeah.
They should have won it. I think that would be a similar scenario, maybe even a better scenario with Kawhi and Paul, who are two insanely good defenders at the wing spot. So I think Kyrie would thrive there as the third star, but also you have to have your shooting around it. You can't gut the shooting.
Right, and that makes sense. I mean, but if you look at the guys that would be on the floor, you'd assume Norm Powell, Kyrie Irving, PG, and Kawhi. I mean, those four would be on the floor 100%. And then you have a fifth.
With a Batum, Marcus, or with the Batum or Zubac, I should say.
Exactly.
Batum or Zoo.
With a most likely a Batum, Zoo, or Robert Covington. Could be in that mix as well. And so, I mean, those guys can shoot. You have Paul George that can shoot. You have Covington that should shoot. You have Powell that can shoot. I mean, you have Batum that can shoot. So they certainly have guys on the floor that can shoot. And you and I have discussed a Zoo before. I don't think Zoo is a guy you can trade. I understand what Hartenstein gave to the team last year, and it certainly seems like he may come back this year. And if he does, it's not going to be a ton of money. I mean, people are talking about, hey, he probably is going to make too much, won't come back to the Clippers. I think it's a little bit of an overreaction. I think that's more of Clippers Twitter and people that are watching Hartenstein. And sure, he was good in stretches, but I'm not sure he can be that starting caliber center that can go and reinforce your defense like Zoo did. I mean, there were times last year where Zoo, the reason why they won games was because of Zoo defensively and what he brought to that team. So I don't think you trade Zoo. But yeah, I mean, you talk about a third star, and yeah, I think that's exactly why. I brought up the reason in terms of health, and you brought up in terms of how it works out basketball-wise. It just makes a lot of sense. Now, the thing is, I don't think Brooklyn would do it. It makes no sense. Marcus Morris and Kennard are not going to give them a better chance to win a title with Kevin Durant than Kyrie Irving. It just doesn't make sense to me. I mean, the Clippers would do it, but I don't think Brooklyn does.
Absolutely, and that's why it's a non-deal. Like, because what we're talking about, Marcus and Luke Kennard, the combined salaries to make up that deal.
Yeah.
That marginally helped Brooklyn in a few areas, in a couple areas, but that's only a deal you do if it's like absolute emergency. Like Kyrie hates everybody. Everybody yeah. hates Kyrie. Let's get this guy out of here. He's a nuisance. Like, that's not something you do until it's like, you know, 2:59 on the deadline, right? And you have nothing else. So that's why I think nothing happens, because the deal that the Clippers are willing to give, Brooklyn is laughing at it, because Kyrie Irving is one of the 10 most gifted offensive players of all time. Like, that's why you don't get rid of him for that type of package. And plus, like, let's be honest, we have seen 0 minutes, absolutely 0 minutes of Ben Simmons, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving together.
Yeah.
Let's give it some time. Let's see how they look by Christmas.
Yeah. And of course there's the issue of Kyrie and salary. I mean, he wants to get paid. And so
he's coming up on, this will be his last year on a contract.
Yeah.
Right?
So he wants to get paid, which is the reason why this is being brought up. And I just don't think it'll work. And for people that are be like, oh, hey, why don't you throw in Brandon Boston? It's like, yeah, but that's not what the Nets want right now. They're not rebuilding. They're trying to win a title right now. They have Kevin Durant, one of the best players in the NBA. They're not looking to rebuild. They don't need a guy like Brandon Boston Jr. that's a project. They need someone that's going to help them win now. And so are Marcus Morris and Luke Kennard going to help them win now? I mean, Kennard could possibly replace a guy like Joe Harris, who knows if he'll still be there next year in terms of injuries. And I don't know what his deal is with the contract, but I think I heard something that maybe he may stay, he may not stay. He could be involved in a trade. And so it's just Marcus Morris is not going to suddenly replace Kyrie Irving and make a ton of sense there for Brooklyn. So.
And I'm just laughing so hard at anyone that believes Brooklyn is even entertaining the idea of trading Russ for, you know, or getting Russ back in a deal.
That's not happening. No. And
oh my God.
They would wait until the deadline to trade Kyrie. I think they would want to give this at least a couple of months. And then if the contract situation's awful, they know they're not going to re-sign him, then you possibly consider it and you see what you can get. But I don't think this is a move that's made during the summer. But one move that could be made during the summer is John Wall, because he's not a part of Houston's future. I mean, that is a certainty. And so he's going to pick up his final year of his contract, and I believe it's his final year. And then
he just picked it up. Yeah.
Yeah. And so he's going to be dealt because they have no need for him, and it's a young team. So the question is, does John Wall make sense? Because I didn't mention this with Kyrie, but everybody talks about how the Clippers need a point guard. And I understand the thought process of they don't, because they've got Paul George and Kawhi to initiate the offense. But there are times where I think you need someone that can initiate the offense and let Kawhi and PG play off the ball and try and get you something when you need a quick hoop, attack the hoop, and try and get it like Reggie Jackson would do from time to time. So John Wall can do that. He certainly can. And the thing is, he doesn't shoot very well, Shane. So does John Wall make any sense to you as an addition to the Los Angeles Clippers?
You know, I think last year before the Norm trade and before Covington, the Norm and Covington trade, I would have said, you know, give it a shot if he's available, if you can get him for obviously the minimum when he gets bought out or whatever the case is. Then yeah, like there's zero risk, like there's less than zero risk, because you can just tell him to go on his way if it doesn't work out, or if, you know, it becomes a problem in the locker room or with minutes and all that. But I think the last part there, the minutes, is something that you and I have talked about, I believe, on the podcast where we were praising Amir Coffey and trying to get him more minutes in the rotation, which was just a challenge. It's like, how do you do that while also bringing in a guy that's, you know, a veteran, 30 plus years old? What is John Wall, 34, something like that? I mean, it's like he's been in the league for a long time, 31. Yeah. Going to be 32 in September.
His body's probably the 34, 35-year-old.
Exactly. Just like Boogie Cousins. They went to college together. They've had the same type of injury history, so it's kind of crazy. I hate to be the one. Like, I don't take pride in being the one that's like, This Clippers roster is perfect as it is. Do not make any more changes. Like, no point guard is needed. You're crazy if you think so. Like, I don't think a point guard is needed when it comes at the expense of other minutes. So, you know, if something happens with Reggie, or if you know, Kawhi and Paul are showing a clear I guess, regression in terms of getting downhill, then yeah, you should probably try something out like that. But I don't like the idea of just bringing Wall in before you even get a chance to see how it goes. Like that's something that, again, with the Kyrie issue, like it's something that happens later if you realize that's a clear need. And we haven't talked about him at all, I don't think, but like Lawrence Frank is rightfully looking for Jason Preston to make an impression. Now, it's kind of crazy to suggest that Jason Preston, who hasn't played a minute of NBA basketball, is going to be an integral part of a championship roster. But like, if you're looking for downhill juice that's young, like that's probably your answer first, before you bring in a veteran like Wall.
So here's my take on this. And I think that the issue is going to be twofold. Number one, it's the contract. He's making $47.4 million this year. We talked about...
Oh, I thought... I was just concerned he'd get bought out.
Yeah.
Something.
I mean, it's possible he gets bought out. But if they try and trade him, then it's going to be difficult. You're going to have to put three guys probably in that deal to make it work. So I don't think... If it's via trade, I don't think it's going to happen.
Oh, absolutely. I hang up the phone immediately for me if it's a trade.
Yeah. As a buyout candidate, I'll listen. But that brings me to number two in terms of why I probably won't sign him. He can't shoot. I mean, it's as simple as that. And we saw with Rondo what it meant to have a guy on the perimeter that can't shoot. And in 2020, 2021, he shot 31.7 from three. A couple of years before that, 30.2. A couple of years before that, 32.7. He is a career 32.3% three-point shooter. And with the spacing that this team prides itself on, I think it will actively hurt your offense at times with his inability to shoot. So that's why I think that Wall is a guy that makes very little sense with this team.
And Brandon, as we know from watching basketball, watching these Clippers play, it's not the shooting percentages. It's how they're treated on the perimeter.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, man, like you've seen the way people treat Russell Westbrook on the 3-point line. Like it's not going to be much different if John Wall's out there trying to space for Kawhi pick and rolls, trying to space for Paul George getting to the lane. Like, you know, that defender will be five steps into the paint. So, you know, I fully agree. And, you know, I just think that we should give this Clippers unit a chance, because I, you know, for all the talk about no downhill ability, no point guard ability, maybe I'm alone on this island, but I think Norm Powell can give you spurts of that. Like he's not a point guard. He's never going to be a point guard, but kind of the reason they got him was because A, he's a top or second tier shooter probably in the NBA, and he can create off the dribble. So if you're looking for creation problems to be fixed, I think this team right here is going to be the best Clippers team that we've seen in the Kawhi PG era when it comes to creation.
Yeah, I think people underrate Norm Powell and what he brings. I mean, we saw early on with him with the Clippers how good he can be. And I mean, there was a game where you think he hit his first five or six shots and everyone's like, all right, yeah, this guy's for real. And we knew that. There's one guy that is now being talked about on Twitter a lot today that I would trade for. And I mean, ooh, we've talked about the Clippers and the guys they have now. And apparently Indiana is looking to deal Malcolm Brogdon. So that is a guy that I would listen to. And you talk about injuries. That is another guy that you are absolutely throwing into the fire as another injury candidate, because Malcolm Brogdon is a guy that simply cannot stay on the floor. So that is absolutely a problem. And I'll tell you how many games he has played each season, and you're not going to be happy. I mean, last season, he played 36 games. The year before that was the COVID-shortened season, 56. The year before that, 54. 64 the year before that, 48 the year before that. He simply cannot stay healthy. However, if he does stay healthy and is a guy that comes to the Clippers in a trade for, let's say, once again, Luke Kennard and maybe Marcus Morris, those two guys together, it's certainly something that I would consider, because he can shoot, my friend. He can absolutely shoot. And you look at what he's done from three, and he has had seasons. I mean, you look at in 18-19, He was at 15.5 points per game, and he was on 50.5% from the field. He was at 42.6 from three and 92.8% from the free throw line. So he is a guy that shoots the ball rather well. And last year he shot 45% from the field. From three, he shot 31.2, which is lower than he's had an entire career. So that is a guy that I would take a flyer on if it meant getting rid of Marcus Morris and Luke Kennard. Because once again, Luke Kennard is not a guy that you would play in the postseason, most likely. And I believe that Brogdon is an upgrade over Marcus Morris. So that is the only guy that I think I would consider right now.
And, you know, I think on the opposite end of the spectrum as some of the other guys we talked about, Malcolm Brogdon just seems to get it. Like he's probably, you know, I've covered the Pacers for a little bit, like in certain some games up in Indiana and some practices. Like he is like just this personality that no one really dislikes. Like he is he's just very veteran savvy. Like he just understands it. And I think, you know, from that perspective, I would love his leadership with that team, with the Clippers team. They call him the president for a reason. I think when it comes to on the court, obviously he can get into the paint at will. Like I've never seen somebody, this is a little bit of hyperbole, but you know, he's going to be 30 next year, but I've never seen someone like, you know, with that body type, that age, that can still somehow break down defense. And it's like, he's not the fastest. He's never going to be the fastest, but he gets into the paint and can create from there and dish out to shooters. And obviously that's Ty Lue's MO. The issue is though, like health, and you pointed to the games played, and I'll even go a step further. Like he has never played. I just looked, and I can't believe this, because I thought that he was on the Bucks teams that made deep runs, but I realized that they got rid of him before that. He's never played more than seven playoff games. And one single run, more than seven. So the idea that he's going to be able to withstand a championship run is kind of ludicrous. Like we have literally never seen it happen with Malcolm Brogdon. Not only can he not stay on the floor in the regular season, but when the games are super competitive, like where the injuries happen the most, which is in the playoffs, we saw a lot of injuries in the first couple rounds this year, right? Like I don't trust that he'll be available. So, you know, I would probably stay away unless it was something really cheap. You know, as we've mentioned, the package that is the most famous here. I don't like this, though, from a perspective of getting rid of a lot to get a point guard, because he has not been on the floor. And it's even worse than Kyrie's situation, because Kyrie, you can kind of look at this past year and say a little bit of a fluke, because he's not going to be unable to play for those vaccination reasons, I guess you could say. So now it's like, I don't think that Kyrie, I think Kyrie is probably due for some positive regression and some luck, if you will. But Brogdon, this seems like an issue he's going to be dealing with for the rest of his career.
Yeah, he has struggled to stay on the court. So it's certainly an injury risk. I mean, it's certainly a very big risk you'd be taking to get a guy like Malcolm Brogdon, but he's a very good basketball player, and it seems like that is something that maybe the Clippers front office would risk. But I'm not entirely sure. Now, let's close out with the draft. The NBA draft is 2 days away, and the Clippers hold a pick in the second round. It is the middle of the second round. If you look at the Clippers' depth chart right now, at point guard, Reggie Jackson, Jason Preston, Terrence Mann, if you want to put him there, Paul George, shooting guard, Norman Powell, Luke Kennard, Terrence Mann, then you have Kawhi, Marcus Morris, Kennard, Mann again, small forward, power forward, Covington, Marcus Morris, Coffey, and then you've got Zoo, Hartenstein, Covington again at the center spot. So there really isn't anything the Clippers need right now. It feels to me, and this is going to be, I feel like it could be crazy, this is a draft and stash to me. This is a guy that you draft abroad. This is a guy that you are going to send to the G League and put on a two-way, because I don't think that you're going to have a guy that you're drafting this year that's going to be a contributor to this championship team. And it's interesting because look at the Warriors, and they just drafted a guy that helped them in the postseason. So you wonder, do the Clippers need somebody? And I think there's a chance if they get rid of a couple of guys in Norman Powell, or pardon me, in Marcus Morris and Luke Kennard. I mean, even Norman Powell, if he's in a deal, which is unlikely to me. Terrence Mann could be in a deal. It feels like this is a draft and stash to me. What does it feel like to you? Any position that you would attack? I mean, maybe a backup point guard, but like you mentioned, Jason Preston's a guy that they want to give a chance to. I think outside of point guard, maybe a backup big, but I don't see anything else.
I was actually going to go with the big because, you know, we've been talking about point guards for 30 minutes. I feel like a big that you could kind of develop. Now, we've seen that story so many times before, haven't we, though? Like, we've seen that story where they think Fee. They have a big.
Look at Fee. And what he did nothing with the Clippers.
So it's like, you know, I, as you can tell, I'm of the mindset that just because something hasn't worked out in the past doesn't mean it's not going to work out next year. So, again, coming back to the same theme of, like, you know, just keep trying and maybe you'll get lucky. So, maybe, you know, I think maybe trying to develop another big, whether it's a traditional or small ball, would probably be the move. But as you said, draft and stash, it's not something that you're looking for now. I mean, hell, dude, we're even talking about Brandon Boston, who can't get – he's not going to get on the floor, right? And the amount of times we saw really great flashes from Brandon Boston, ironically, in that game against Boston. I don't know what he had that game, but it was nuts. He went nuclear from three, it felt like. I think – like, he's a priority for them to try to get better, to try to get more muscle mass, to try to get just a stronger ability to make reads out there and better shot selection for Brandon Boston. So they're still kind of trying to nurture him, and it's not like it's not that they don't need anything. Every team could use more talent. We know that, but it seems like they have so much talent right now that focusing on the future or focusing on a prospect just seems like it's so far on the back burner for this team that their window is now. Like, their window is not in 2 years. Their window is now.
Yeah, it just feels like that whoever you're going to draft is not going to make an impact. By the way, I was looking at a Clippers draft history, and do you know who they drafted who they drafted in 2018 with their first round pick? They had two picks.
Was this the 2018? Was this the Jerome Robinson, or was this the year before?
So Jerome Robinson was number 13. Number 12. Do you know who went number 12?
Oh, I have no idea.
Miles Bridges. The Clippers drafted Miles Bridges trade him for SGA.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
well,
you talk about a trade right there.
You end up getting
You get Paul George out of it. Yeah, you get Paul George because you end up trading away SGA. But I didn't realize that the Clippers ended up trading Miles Bridges.
And you said something at the top of the show that was hilarious to me, though. You said, you know, you can kind of predict where they're gonna what they're looking at, but just trying to predict who the Clippers are gonna pick is a fool's errand because they have not picked well, like, historically with the, you know, with the front office. So it's like, even if you think this is who they should pick and this is who they will pick, they're going to surprise you, and it's not going to be a positive surprise either.
So this obviously does not include trades and who they acquired via trade. But if you go back to Blake Griffin in 2009, and we start with 2010, Al Farouk Aminu and Willie Warren were 2010, Trey Tompkins and Travis Leslie, 2011, Furkan Aldemir in 2012, Reggie Bullock, 2013, CJ Wilcox, 2014, Bryce Johnson, who everyone thought was going to be this 3-point-3-and-D guy, and Chuck Diallo in 2016, Miles Bridges and Jerome Robinson, 2018, and Bridges obviously became SGA, Terrence Mann and Jalen Hands were in 2019, 2020, Reggie Perry and Quentin Grimes in 2021. Of course, you have guys that came in like Boston Jr. and via trades and stuff, but the actual Clippers picks haven't been stellar since 2010.
Yeah, and that's why I like the idea of, like, you know, it feels like they've tried bigs, they've tried wings, and they've tried guards.
Yeah.
Terrence Mann has stuck. You know, he's stuck so far, so that's good. But I guess, like, for me, it's just trying to find the next zoo or try to find the next big that you can either play or develop up and then trade. That's what this feels like to me is, like, let's just try to draft somebody that we can make look good and then somebody wants them later on, you know?
Yep. And, you know, if a guy like Mooney can play for the Warriors, it's possible the Clippers can find somebody. But who knows? I mean, it just depends on the depth and injuries. And we end this podcast the same way we started. I mean, the Clippers, if they can stay healthy, they certainly have a chance to win it all. But the question is, can they stay healthy? At Young NBA on Twitter, columnist, analyst for Forbes Sports. He's a guy that should be writing all over the place. If you are someone that wants a writer, Shane Young is certainly your guy. Shane, always a blast having you on the pod.
Thanks for that, man. I greatly appreciate it. You have no idea. And anytime, man, I'm glad to be your guest on the return here after 2 months. So, you know, hopefully we get some off-season content to talk about.
Yes, indeed. So 2 months off. We'll be back after the draft. I'm hoping to record at the weekend. If I don't record at the weekend, it'll be early next week that we'll record a pod, chat about the draft and what happened then. Until next time, he's Shane. I am Brandon. You can follow me on Twitter at BDMarcus. You can follow Shane at YoungNBA. Follow the podcast on Twitter, Ethos Clippers. Rate and review the podcast on iTunes. Listen wherever you do. It's always much appreciated. Until next time, go Clips!